Welcome to Caribbean Mystics Podcast,
where we marry mysticism, superstition, and lore. I'm your host, Paulina.
And I'm your host, Gabrielle. And we are your resident Caribbean mystics.
Join us today as we explore the depths of real supernatural stories
told by real people located right in our very own backyard. Peter, along with a group of his friends, go to St. Croix's Annalee Bay for a weekend of fun at the beach. As night sets in, Peter discovers that they have forgotten all the food back at his parents' home, and he must go back to retrieve it. Peter, along with his friend Ryan, who volunteers to join him on the drive, begin the usual trek through the quiet, desolate road leading away from the beach, when something unexplainable occurs.
I was born in St. Croix, Christmas baby. Definitely my brother and my sister, they say it was ruined that year. I remember growing up with graveyards in the front yard of my parents' yard. That was like back in the day when you were like poor, you couldn't buy a plot of land to bury your dead. I guess it was still okay to bury them on your own land. As a kid, I remember always being like terrified of them. Just ready, like waiting for something to happen. So it's funny that this story is coming up now because it never did. It never nothing ever happened in the front yard graveyard. It was definitely end of summer 98 99, 19 going on 20, and him as well too.
So I grew up here in New York on Long Island. I went to school with Peter.
And we were home on vacation from college. Also, four other guys with us. So we were planning to go to Annalee to go surfing and to go camping for the night. That part of Northside in St. Croix, there's a mill just in the bay to the east of Annalee Bay. There's another mill on what was the Lowettes property, the Cattleman.
There's only like a couple of houses and or just like wild rainforest back up in there.
There was a lot of agriculture that was happening in that part of the island. And, you know, we know our history. You know, there was definitely some slave lives that were working on that part of the island for sure, because there's ruins of it.
There's like an offshoot off that road that we went down. It's just like two tire tracks serpentine down the side of this mountain.
You know, everybody knows those roads as like Scenic Drive, Davis Bay, going up the Beast. Like the north side of the ridge where the rainforest is there in St. Croix.
There's like a plateau. You go, we park on there. They had like a rope tied off to a tree and at the top of the plateau, and then at the bottom where the beach was, it was the other end of that line was tied off to another tree. So we would just basically grab all our gear in one hand, hold onto that rope, and then basically slide down and walk down that cliff to get to the beach.
Typical fashion, just entirely unprepared for the most part. I think we remember to bring the drinks and the surfboards and maybe like a tarp or something. We realized after having like played all afternoon that we forgot the food at home.
It's like, oh man, I forgot the cooler.
We gotta go back and get food. So I jump in this Bronco 2 that my parents had.
I was like, all right, I'll go with you, Peter and I. Start driving along that road.
It's like already dark, 1.5 lanes wide, bunch of guinea grass all over both sides.
And we got our windows open because there's no AC in that Bronco with Caribbean AC.
We're approaching some corner. It's like sharp hairpin turn. And I see what looked like it was like a headlight coming. And then it's getting closer and, you know, start to slow down and pull over on my side of the road a little bit more.
And we expected it to be a car or motorcycle. Maybe someone was walking their dog or something. Or
it's just a car with one headlight. It's St. Croix. It's like completely normal. And it's getting closer. It looked like an old car headlight, how they used to look. Orangey, yellow, burnt. It was bright enough where it wasn't really making out anything. We're moving towards it. It's moving towards us. Can't see no bicycle and motorcycle. I'm thinking like it has to be somebody with a flashlight, but it's absolutely still.
We're slowed down. The truck is still bouncing a little bit, going over potholes and little pebbles or rocks that are in the road. This thing is just completely steady, probably like 3 feet off the ground.
And at this point, we're 10, 15 feet away at the most.
And we come up next to it. I pass it on my side.
I'm like so focused on this thing. But of course, Ryan's looking too. He's in the passenger seat.
And I just follow it to see if I could see like a rear tire of a bicycle or someone's hand or a leg or something. And I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything underneath it. I didn't see it on the side of it, around it.
Oh my God. Chills up and down my spine. It's just this glowing, dirty orange yellow sphere cruising along at, you know, 10 to 15 miles an hour, just going, doing its thing, wherever the hell it's going.
I'm going to call it like an orb of light. That's the best description I can give. As we passed it, I followed it.
And I'm like wrenching my neck around. I could see the light behind us as well, too. It was all around. 360 degrees of light.
Turned back and I looked at Peter, and Peter's reaction was just like mine.
Ryan's looking at me, I'm looking at him.
And then Peter just gave it some gas and we got out of there.
God, I was like, let's get the hell out of here. We couldn't talk about anything else the whole way home. I don't think we said anything for a couple seconds. We're just shaking head like, what in the hell did we just witness?
I don't know what it was. I have no idea.
What was that? I don't know. What was that? I don't know. We got home. I was like, shit. Going back? I was like, damn, I could stay by myself tonight. Y'all go back?
What happens if, you know, we go back and all the guys aren't there?
Your mind just starts racing. Like, that man ain't there anymore. Like, they're missing. I guess we gotta find out. We weren't about to leave them down there by themselves. We went back, just taking our sweet ass time.
And then we drove by that spot. We didn't see anything else at that time. Got to the guys.
In the pitch dark to Annalee, it's like one of the most remote beaches. People barely go there in the day. Was not looking forward to going scaling down the side of a hill with a piece of rope to get down to the campsite.
We told the guys when we got back down, explained them the story, and
I think we just start paddling on the rum after that. It shakes everything about what you think could be real, what could be possible. Like, you know, you have to be naive to think that you know everything that's out there, and like you are like the master of this universe. That not knowing feeling, that's what really sticks with me. Still 20 odd years later, still trying to figure that out. I witnessed it that night myself, nor have I ever seen it again, though.
I don't know what it was, but we did see it, whatever it was. That's the last we saw of it and or heard of it.
We
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. Welcome to Caribbean Mystics.
Welcome, welcome.
What an amazing story that they shared with us today, Peter and Ryan.
Yeah, you know what? I love the way that they told this story because it was really evident that, like, even just bringing up the memory of it, it elicited an emotional reaction. And, you know, I feel like in several of our stories where you're listening to people retell their stories, you really get the feeling of just a snippet of what they were experiencing at that point in time. And I feel like that helps to provide the richness that is necessary in storytelling and profound storytelling at that.
Absolutely. And that is one of the reasons why I love doing this podcast and finding these stories, because you hear it in their voices.
Oh, yeah.
Just like you said, it's different. It's different than reading off paper somebody's story. So, yes, let's dive into this story, girl.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we actually like gotten into the history, because I feel like the history is going to be a really important facet of this story. I just wanted to give our listeners a description of what Annalee Bay on St. Croix is kind of like. It's a very secluded and rocky beach. And in order to get there, you actually have to hike 2.5 miles through dense jungle or rainforest. And I know a lot of people aren't even aware of the fact that St. Croix has a rainforest. But it's a very lengthy experience to actually get to the beach. And then to get back from the beach, you have to go back through that same path.
2.5 miles?
2.5 miles.
The way they describe it, they're like, oh, we just, you know, went down the rope and brought our stuff and our gear. I'm like, but they were young too, so.
And probably like having a great time, maybe already had threw back a couple drinks. And so it was kind of like a vibe, you know?
They don't remember. Yeah.
Facts. And I think he was talking about playing on the beach and stuff. And I'm looking at the pictures and like, there's like no sand. It's like they were literally playing on rocks. Yeah. They were literally playing on rocks. However, I'll say that just looking at the beach and how beautiful and pristine it is, like completely like uncorrupted and untouched. I can imagine that there's a lot of wildlife in and around the area because of just how undisturbed it is. And finally, I just wanted to say that this beach is very popular for its natural tide pools. There are multiple tide pools that were naturally made, you know, in nature that people visit. And so that makes the 2.5 mile hike to get there and back even more worth it, you know?
That's right. Because when I Googled this, that's the first thing that came up were these amazing, beautiful tide pools. It made me want to go, honestly, and definitely want to go check that out because that sounds beautiful.
Let's make a trip of it. It sounds like fun. I would need to work out before we go. Like, I need to get this body in shape to make that 2.5 hike, 2.5 mile hike down and then back up.
With your cooler, everything.
Yes. When I was looking up research on the area, I was like, oh no, this is intense.
But well worth it, like you said.
Absolutely.
I researched as well, but I kind of looked more into the history of Annalee Bay. So when I looked up Annalee Bay online, the only thing I could really find that was like documented actually in Estate Annalee Sugar Mills was off the libraryofcongress.gov. And I found a bunch of photos from a survey that they took. And this documentation was compiled in 1968 for the Historic American Engineer Record of Estate Annalee Sugar Mill. And pretty much it's 7 photos, more or less, of the steam engines, crushers, ruins, the engine house, pretty much what it was back then. And they're really interesting photos. So I'll put the link in the show notes as well for you guys if you're interested in seeing what this is about. Many of these sugar mills are now places to explore and to educate the public. And most of them were built around 1750 through the 1800s while under the Danish rule. So I didn't know this, but St. Croix was one of the richest sugar producing islands in all of the Caribbean. Did you know that?
I recently learned that, and I heard that, which I didn't know, and I hope people don't like make fun of me about it, but I didn't realize that rum was created in the Caribbean. And so
what?
When you think about St. Croix having so many sugar mills and basically being like top tier of the sugar industry, you have to think like I wonder what the connectivity is, because they don't have a true place of origin for rum. The earliest documented having like historical context of rum being produced is in Barbados in like 1650, but they don't have an actual like written origination point that I know of, that I found in my research. So then I think about like Cruzan rum, and I know back during Danish times they had several rum distilleries in the Virgin Islands itself.
Yeah.
And so yeah,
I do remember hearing about the bay leaves, you know, because there's an old farm that my family used to have on St. John, and they produced rum, and they had like a bay leaf farm. Yeah, the bay rum tree. So I just looked it up. Yeah, I didn't even think like bay leaves, not only do they have so many amazing properties, but they also make rum.
And I feel like it's important to, you know, like recognize and pay homage to the reason why St. Croix had such a prolific sugarcane industry is because of the thousands of enslaved people from Africa that came and were forced to do that labor. And shortly after the Virgin Islands was emancipated of slavery, and technically it was the Danish West Indies, sugar production steeply declined because they had lost so much of their workforce that it was just like, or they had to pay people now, you know, despite the fact that it was not a very good pay, it was very meager, they still had to like come out of pocket for more. And so the amount of profit that they made severely reduced after the emancipation of slavery. Mm-hmm. And so the sugar mills quickly closed thereafter, and the luster of that profit, you know, diminished. So when the United States actually bought the Virgin Islands, we were in like severe neglect. Like it was a very hard time for the people that was living here, because Denmark was damn near in debt, you know, or bankrupt.
Wow.
Yeah, they were spending over $100,000, I think it was like $200,000 every year that they kept the DWI. They were spending over $200,000 in just trying to maintain it. So they were constantly at a disadvantage in keeping the islands.
Oh my gosh.
The proclamation of the Emancipation Proclamation was read.
It's such a dark history we have here in the Caribbean. St. Croix itself had over 200 sugar plantations. So you can imagine how many lives were suffering under that regime working. There are tons of ruins nowadays. Many of them, though, are destroyed by hurricanes and just time. I wouldn't be surprised with all this dark history if there were more people out there that had paranormal experiences surrounding these suffered grounds.
Oh, I definitely feel like, especially with the launching of this podcast and opening an avenue for people to share these type of stories, I definitely feel that we are going to be hosting a lot more stories from St. Croix. And people coming forward to share their own experiences and their families.
All right, let's continue. I know that you wanted to talk about some of the science behind what they witnessed that night.
Yeah, so I'm somebody that, and I think a lot of us can relate, is I need somebody to marry the logic and the magic for me, because I just need some background, you know, like it's very hard for me to just dive into like, oh my God, you know, like this is truly supernatural without doing the background checks to see what other avenues it might take, you know? Mm-hmm. So in my research, I was researching orbs, and this is going to be more so as it lends itself to like photography and videography, but I figured it was pertinent because most people's relationship with orbs actually has to do with recorded like digital stuff. I wanted to see if there was any kind of information that could be linked in both capacities. And basically, like, the experiences that people have where they see orbs in pictures or in videos, it is a phenomenon. Through the lens of science, it is a phenomenon called backscatter, and it's when the camera's flash, as well as the lensing of the camera itself, picks up particles in the air, such as dust or water, and that may potentially cause a orb of light to show up. On the flip side of that, in just keeping with that same thread, I was reading a very interesting blog post from a medium, and she was talking about these orbs of light, and she was saying that she believes that an orb of light is going to be a spirit. And how they work is that a spirit, in order to manifest itself in this realm, they need some sort of vehicle that allows them to show up. And so an orb of light allows for that vehicle, because it is shaped usually in a circular pattern, it does not restrict the energetic flow. And so it's much easier for a spirit to show up in a orb of light than any other form because of the shape of the orb. And so she was basically saying that she feels like orbs of light, just in her experience as a medium, is directly connected to the spirit realm. And when an orb of light shows up, it is either a guardian angel or a regular angel or a spirit that's passed on, that's come to deliver a message to you or offer some kind of guidance, a validation. And she said that she has had readings where a spirit will come through to her and tell her that, especially to someone who's grieving very hard and they wish that this person had attended their, you know, important ceremonies like the birth of a child or a baptism or a wedding, she'll have the spirit come through and will basically be like, tell them to go look back at the photos or the video footage and they'll see me there. And when they go to look back, they'll notice these orbs of light that might have a specific color. According to her, you know it's an angelic orb of light when it is white. She was also saying, because it was kind of interesting, she was quoting that it's important not to get mixed up in the orbs, because sometimes in certain religious doctrine, like in the Bible, there's a verse where they talk about how entities that are negative in nature may surface themselves as an orb of light to make it seem like they are of good, you know, energy, but it's very deceptive. So she was basically talking about how it's important that when you have these experiences, what is the overall energy that you feel coming from the orb of light? So I thought back about Ryan and Peter's experience, and to me it sounded like they didn't necessarily have a negative experience. Like what they experienced was complete like wonder and just shock.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the impression that they were afraid. Like, in neither of their storytelling, they didn't feel like it was anything negative. But I just thought it was interesting that spirits would use an orb of light as a vehicle to come. But yeah, you had a really interesting scientific theory that I wanted you to talk about.
Yeah, so pretty much when I started researching, I typed in ball of light, and what came up was something called ball of lightning or ball lightning. And I've never heard of this in my life, and I feel like this just makes so much sense to so many occurrences that have happened in history or people's accounts what they thought was supernatural, but it was completely something natural but extremely rare to see. So ball lightning is pretty much a luminescent ball that can range from a pea size all the way to the size of a car. And it is extremely rare to see, but pretty much it's what it sounds like. It's a ball of lightning. They usually occur during, before, or after electrical storms, thunderstorms. There have been several accounts that I read of people today and throughout history that have witnessed them come through their windows, their houses, their chimneys, even going through a glass window and leaving a perfect circular shape behind. They pretty much come in all colors, yellow, green, blue, orange, red. They can last from up to a minute or several minutes. They can be erratic and move all over the place or be perfectly still. Some have dissipated away and some have exploded in your face or your house and catch fire to the whole place. It's absolutely nuts, but you can go YouTube it, and there are some people that have caught it on camera, so it's quite amazing phenomenon. So I'm trying to relate this to Peter and Ryan's story. So I asked Peter some questions. I was like, so what was the weather like that day? And he's like, actually, it was a little bit stormy. So who knows? Maybe it was this ball of lightning thing going on. However, I'm not going to only chalk it up to that, because I feel like, though this is a scientific explanation, I feel like science and spirit kind of intertwine with each other. And why can't spirit manipulate scientific reactions? Why can't we have a scientific explanation for spirit and how it works? Why can't ghosts have a scientific explanation to them? Does it make it any less magical or spooky and still supernatural? The name is in it. It's natural. It's just super.
I feel like humans use science to pump up our ego. And so we are trying to do all of these things to find rational explanations, because the concept of us living in a multi-dimensional, multifaceted reality is a lot. You know, like, we know that there are aliens, but the government itself has yet to, like, come through and, like, acknowledge it in a public, completely, like, in-your-face forum. And so there is this underfoot, undercurrent of trying to stifle out the idea of, you know, a higher existence and higher forms. And every time we try, there are things that happen that you just can't explain. For instance, like the orbs of light, right? Mm-hmm. There is my theory on it, just to, like, you know, get to a place where we close this out, because we could be here for hours. My theory on it is that it's a residual haunting. And a residual haunting occurs when a event occurs that there is a huge energetic surplus, and so, or emotional surplus of, you know, energy. So it could be anywhere from, like, a murder or rape, something that elicits a huge emotional response, or it could be something super happy, like a ceremony, a party, music playing. It creates these energetic imprints in the items or the roads or the homes that it happens around. And so literally the energy is stuck inside or on the items around. And so they're continually repeating events that continue to occur. And part of the residual energy, and this would make sense why it happens during, like, storms or where there's lightning flashes, is because, and we've talked about this before, in order for an energy to come forward, in order for a spirit to show itself, it has to be given some sort of electric input. And so this is why some people will go to sleep at night and they'll have a lengthy sleep and they'll wake up in the morning and they're extremely tired. It's probably because you have something sucking on your energy all night. Or when you have these haunting experiences in a home, you know, the water pump will go out and, you know, the electricity in the house will start to go haywire. It's because that energy is being sucked from these electrical, like, stimulated areas to foster the spiritual occurrences that are taking place. And so you're saying that about the thunderstorms and stuff, and all I'm thinking to myself is, wow, this continues to underline my own spiritual belief systems, because I feel like science is trying to put a lot of explanations. They've tried to do it with the Bermuda Triangle, you know, but I think that we can be a people of duality, and we can have both science and spirituality work together. I am not someone who turns up their nose at science. I think science is important and it's valuable. I start to get ass up with science when science tries to explain everything away, despite the fact that oftentimes these scientific explanations don't make sense. And then in 10 years, they come back and they're like, oh yeah, we got it wrong, actually. And then they'll come through with no evidence. And I know science is always changing and it's always developing, but so is spirituality. And so is our consciousness. And so one can't be without the other, in my opinion. Now I'll get off my pulpit.
I thought that was such a perfect description, because I feel like it's exactly that. They're intertwined in this weird tangle where they work with each other. I like your theory of the residual energy. So is that what you're sticking with? Do you think it's this residual haunting that they witness on the road?
Yeah. I think it's residual energy. And I wouldn't doubt if somebody email us tonight to be like, I've seen that same orb of light and that same stretch of road. So if that is you, come forward and let your girl know. Because now I am intrigued. Did you have any theories that you wanted to, like, hang your coat on?
I'll be honest, Gabby, like, the ball of lightning thing took me down a rabbit hole, and it was very fascinating. And like I said, it's just this intertwinement of both.
And I'll say the History Channel put out an article saying that ball of lightning, they believe, is a experience in which humans hallucinate.
What? Okay?
So you have one entity saying, like, ball of lightning and science, and the History Channel, who is, like, a legitimate source in most instances, is saying that they believe it's a hallucinogenic experience. Really? and that it's not real.
That is not real. Wow.
Yeah, yo. I'll send you the article. We'll put it in our show notes.
I don't believe it. I'm sticking with my theory. Ball of lightning. And you know what? Ghosts could be hallucinations too. Like, I guess the only validating factor would be the ghost, like, yo, that lottery ticket is 7654.
You know, I've heard stories like that before. This was like fun. Like, I'm happy that we got into this. You guys don't know it, but we've recorded this episode multiple times.
Several.
And I feel like this is our best discussion that we've recorded, and I'm grateful that we were able to do this. Yes. And you came with some really good points. The ball of lightning is definitely a good point. Mm. And I think that we're both right.
Same. Thank you guys for listening today.
Comment on our social media, follow us, check out the show notes. If you have anything that you want to share, any stories, yes, any feedback, we'd love feedback. We are a new podcast and we are absolutely wanting whatever feedback that we could get to improve and to just show up better and more fuller for the people in OL communities and the rest of the world, hopefully.
Yes, yes, definitely. So leave us those 5-star reviews if you enjoyed this show. Thank you so much. Bye.
We'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to Caribbean Mystics Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share with your family and friends. Like, follow, and subscribe to keep up with all of our spooky Caribbean content.
Do you have a story you'd like to share that took place in the Caribbean? Email us at CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. That's CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. Or check the show notes for more info.
Caribbean Mystics is created and hosted by Paulina Creaky and Gabrielle Carrard. Theme song is Folktale Juve Rhythm by Umi Marcano.
Sage Sanctuary. This one-of-a-kind metaphysical shop is located on St. Thomas in the Yacht Haven Grand Shopping Plaza. They offer a unique collection of esoteric books, tarot and oracle decks, crystals, incense, apothecary herbs, and mystical resources to support the exploration of the sacred self. The sanctuary is home to multiple mediums, channels, and gifted psychics offering a glimpse into the seen and unseen. Akashic record readings, tarot readings, aura photography, dream interpretation, astrology sessions, various modalities of Reiki, energy healing, and more. Additionally, the sanctuary hosts a community calendar of magical events, including weekly and monthly hands-on workshops, expert lectures, guided meditations, sound baths, certification classes, and more. Make sure to call Sage Sanctuary today at 340-775-7253 or visit their website at sagesanctuary.com. That's Sage, S-A-J-E, sanctuary.com. This episode of Caribbean Mystics is brought to you by Alexandra Marie Photography for all your life moments. Raw and authentic captures in the unique landscapes of the Virgin Islands. She specializes in weddings, proposals, events, maternity, senior portraits, and family portraits. And the great thing about it is she offers a local discount of $50 off and wedding packages and loyalty discounts for returning clients. She's available to shoot on St. Thomas, St. John, and Water Island. Alexandra Marie Photography. Call 340-690-2062 to book your next shoot or check her website at alexandramariephotography.zenfolio.com.